Okay. So one view in the Rishonim is that in the standard view of the Rishonim, the workers are liable up to the value of their contract. The view in the Tur seemed to be a little different. The view in the Tur seemed to say that the workers could be liable ad kedei hakefel mischar harishonim, up to double the value of their original contract. We're still not 100% sure exactly about the different permutations in the Shitas. I know Yakir raised a lot of interesting questions, a lot of interesting points last time about exactly how to define kefel. Is this the kefel of the remaining work? How to distinguish in the Shita of the Tur and the Rambam. I don't have further clarity on that, but I still want to look into it more over the next few days. Did any of you make any progress on that question? Just to sort out the different... Right now, I think there are clearly three different Shitas. There's Rashi that says you can withhold the wages that are owed. You have the Rambam that says they're liable up to the value of their contract. And there's the sheet of the Tur, where arguably you could interpret the Tur as saying the workers are liable up to double the value of their contract. But I don't have any greater clarity on the more fine-grained questions about the questions that Yakir was raising last week. Yakir, did you make any progress on that?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Do you mean like on the chiluk between like the Ramban and the Ritva?
No, not so much on the question between the Ramban and the Ritva, more like these like questions about kefel of the amount that's owed and what's considered a net loss. But it's okay. We don't need to get into those questions right now. If we could actually hold off on them for the time being. Eitan, did you have a question or?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I actually think the Tur is pretty compelling. You might have spoken about this on Thursday. I wasn't here, but is it possible to say that within the Tur, he really believes that this is a serious issue that the Poel is doing by pulling out, and it's like it's considered like nezek and damages for the fact that he's breaching this contract, and not just
so notice,
that.
So notice this is going to be important for us to distinguish later on. Notice we haven't spoken about damages right now. We're only talking about remedies. About being able to hire workers and impose some of the costs on the breaching parties. We haven't
right,
spoken about
damages
yet.
But couldn't you say that once you start talking about KFL, you're already implying or definitely leaning towards the concept that there are damages in this case?
Arguably. Again, right now, you'll see why I want to distinguish between damages and this idea that you could impose some of the costs on the breaching party. But you're right that the Tur is is definitely... You know, the opposite of Rashi. If Rashi is saying all you can do is withhold money that's owed, the Tur is saying you could actually put that worker on the hook. That worker could suffer a net loss of up to double the value of the contract.
Right.
Now, we saw some interesting formulations in the poskim here. Well, I guess the original formulation came from the Sma, in the poskim from the Sma, but it really has its roots in the Ramban and the Ritva. Again, they were trying to figure out how do you get to this shear of ad kedei scharan, and the Ramban b'metzia ein vav mebeis said that the reason why they're liable ad kedei scharan velo yoser is disamcha datayu meikara. It's not totally clear what that phrase means, but one way of reading it means that because their initial das was to make themselves liable up to that amount, kind of like a chiyav mitam arev, or like, and the mistama what they had in mind. Was that when they're going to be hired for a $100 contract, that they're willing to make themselves liable up to that shear, which is similar to what we saw in the Sma last week. The better formulation comes from the Ritva in Bamatziah in Hamabes, and here is where he was actually discussing Mitam Arev explicitly, and he says, "Im Tomar, Im Kain Lama Eino Socher Aleim Ela Kadei Kefel Scharan Bilvad O Kadei Chavila." Why is the liability capped at Kefel Scharan? And again, said Yesh Lomar de Mistama Hainu Da Siku Adatayhu Sheim Lo Yuchlu Laso Sheim Sal Olam Polam Bekefel Scharon Val Ze Bilvad Hiftichuhu. So the assumption in the Ritva here is that when you hired these guys, they had in mind that hey, if we breach, you know, at least you'll be able to find workers at double the value of at double the price of our contract, and so that really caps the liability that they would have. So again, for the Ritva, it sounds like their liability is somehow shoehorned into their Gemiras Das initially when they agreed to do this work, and Mistama, it's capped at a certain amount. Noah.
So
This is like, is the Ritva saying like it's an umdana? Yes. That like that's what, yeah?
Okay. I mean, at least on the face of it, the language sounds very much like it's an umdana. That's definitely what the language implies. Yeah. I think it was Yoni. Was it Yoni last time who was arguing that like kind of the symmetry is more direct? You know, like, oh, the way the SMA put it is that, oh, if you're going to receive $100 from the contract, then there's some like direct consequence that you should also be held liable up to that amount. But I think in the Ritva, it sounds much more umdana like. Adam.
Yeah, I think there also seems to be a contrast between the Rambam and the Ritva in terms of whose perspective they're viewing it from. In the sense that the Ramban seems to be saying we're looking at through the view of the Poalim, right? And so in their minds, they've went to the contract assuming that at most they'll be willing to give up the value of the contract, versus the perspective of the Ritva, which is the Baal Bayis had the perspective that if I didn't hire these people, I could have hired someone for double the price.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's a possibility here to distinguish between which parties, through which perspective are we going to look at this and generating liability. Yeah, it's a good point. Let me just make another observation here. This is kind of comes up incidentally in the Pisrei Choshen. So if you look at the Pisrei Choshen here in Ha'ara, in his Ha'ara Chaf Beis, he just raises the idea, he quotes this from the Maloha Roim, that maybe there's a requirement in order for the Poel to be liable mitam Davar Ha'aved, that when the Poel was hired, he has to know that it's a Davar Ha'aved that he's being hired for. Because if he doesn't know that he's being hired for something that's a Davar Ha'aved, then he's not mischayev himself up to that amount. It's an interesting question. I don't think you really need this. I don't think you would necessarily need the Poel to know. You might say every time you enter an agreement, there's this background understanding that if it's a Davar Ha'aved, you could be held liable. Here he seems to be saying that at least under some conditions, it would be a requirement that the Poel know that he's being hired for a Davar Ha'aved in order to trigger the assumed hischaivos for ad kedei schar and liability. But I don't know. I mean, I don't really know about that question. I just wanted to raise it for your consideration. Any of you have thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think that's something that's, I think, troubled all of us for a while, which was like, how does the Davar Ha'aved factor get triggered?
Right. Well, so that's what we spoke about. If you think the chiyuv is mitam arev and the schayv is midas, then right, it's voluntarily generated. But you might think in order for it to be generated in that way, you need to have das that you're hired for a davar aved,
right?
Which is what this idea is getting at. Yeah. Okay. Let me just address two other points within this discussion of ad kedei scharan.
So, wait, just one thing on that.
Sure.
So I'm not sure if this is what Adam was trying to get at, but is this also another way to like severely limit like when Davar Ha'aved would even happen? Because like is it the only case would be like if you take the formulation of like it's what's it called? It's when there was no one else, like. Would it have to be that the Baal has to say, oh, and you are my only option or something?
Sounds
like
it. Yeah, it sounds like it. Or at least that the worker knows that he's being hired to pick the flax, you know, from its soaking unit. And then he knows that this is a Davar Ha'aved kind of situation.
So it's like, again, it makes it almost nearly impossible. Like, again, maybe this is less so because I could imagine having a conversation like that. But still, it seems like very almost impossible to have Davar Ha'aved.
Yeah, it would substantially limit the cases of Davar Ha'aved. That's exactly correct. The Ritva in Bava Metzia Ayin Chesed Beis raises what's a really important challenge to Rashi's Shita of Ad Kedei Scharan. So you recall Rashi said that at best you can withhold the wages that are owed to the worker. So that I mentioned last time, this really raises a problem. A lot of Rishonim, the Ritva and Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, think that that's problematic because that makes the remedy for Davar Ha'avod, if it's limited to withholding the wages that are owed to the worker, it makes Davar Ha'avod almost into the same as Rabbi Dosa's Shita of a classic case of Chazara de Poel. Okay, it's a little bit of a cheshbon. But the idea is, remember, for Abdosa, anytime a Poel backs out, it's Yad Poel al Tachtona, which means that he has to cover the Balabayas's, he has to forfeit his salary to cover the Balabayas's costs in hiring a new worker. So the concern here is that Davar HaAvud looks identical to Rabbi Dosa's Yad Poel al Tachtona for a non-Davar HaAvud case. And if you read the Gemara, if you read the back and forth in the Gemara on Ayin Vav Amibes, the Gemara first sets up the Machlokas Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim. Chachamim say Yad Poel al HaHelyona. Rabbi Dosa says Yad Poel al Tachtona. Remember, Yad Poel al Tachtona means first you calculate how much the Balabayas has to pay. You deduct any extra amount of that from the Poel salary, and the Poel only gets what's left over. And then the Gemara says, "Bamet dvar mamurim bedavar she'eino avod." And if it's a davar avod, then sochar le'eino matan. So the Rishonim point out that there has to be a distinction between sochar le'eino matan bedavar avod and Reb Dosa's Yad Poel al Tachtona in order to just make sense of the flow of the Gemara. The Gemara itself makes it seem like davar avod is different for Reb Dosa. So the Rishonim here press Rashi, and they say, as you can see, the Ritva himself says, "V'od kisha asu k'tzas melacha." If Rashi's right that the only time you could withhold wages is if they did some work, afilu bedavar she'eno avod nam yom Reb Dosa Yad Poel al Tachtona. Right, ule'el bevraisa mashma delekuli alma ika hafresh bein davar avod ledavar she'eno avod. And that's why the Ritva rejects Rashi's position. He thinks it doesn't really maintain a significant difference between davar avod and davar she'eno avod. So do any of you have thoughts on what the answer to that question is offhand, al regel achas? So I know, I think somebody mentioned last time that maybe the remedy of matan is what's different. Does anybody remember who made that comment?
That was me.
Yeah, Gabe, that was a good comment, right? So Gabe said that maybe, Metal will get some nachas over there. So Gabe said that, well, okay, maybe there's no difference between Sochar Alehen in Davar Avod and non-Davar Avod, but there is a difference with respect to Matan. That is actually a nice, easy resolution to this question. You'll see the Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz, quoting the Shit Mukabetas and Ayin Chasamid Aleph, disagrees, or he offers a different answer. He quotes this objection to Rashi. He says, Perish HaKuntras, Ad kedei schar means im asuk tzas melacha v'lo kiblu adayin klum sochar lein ad kedei shechayiv lahem. V'yim tomar l'pir zem mai ika bein davar avid l'davar she'eno avid. The davar she'eno avid nami kamar Rabbi Dosa l'el diad poel al tachtona. So his answer is, anybody get a chance to see his answer? Yoni, I know you saw it. Oh, but yeah, so you got Yakir, raise his hand. Yakir, go for it.
What he says is that if it's a dover, it's in dover she'eino avod, the worker's only liable up to the whatever the normal market rate of the poel completing the malacha is, and so if there are no poel available, you're gonna have to wait until there are poel available at the normal market rate. In dover avod, in davar avod, liability is up to whatever the poel are charging right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So his answer is that there you could maintain a distinction even within sochar alehen between a davar avod case and a non davar avod case for Abdosa. He thinks if it's a non davar avod case for Abdosa, if the cost of workers, if it's expensive to get workers, so the balabayas has to wait, and basically until he could find workers at a reasonable rate comparable to what he hired the first worker for. So if it's a davar ha'avod case, then even if the person you're hiring is much more expensive than what the market sustains, than what the going market rate usually is, you're allowed to hire him for a davar ha'avod case. But if it's a non-davar ha'avod case, and the market rate is usually lower, but this guy is gouging you because of the extenuating circumstances, in a non-davar ha'avod case, you have a duty to wait and hire at a reasonable rate. So there is a distinction in Sochar Alehen that basically says you have to wait out the inefficiencies in the market in a non-davar ha'avod case, but you're not required to in a davar ha'avod. In a davar ha'avod case, you could try to fix up the problem at any price and at least assign some of that cost to the worker who breached. Yoni, I know you emailed me about this arena parrots. Do you have further thought? Do you have thoughts on it that you wanted to share, or just that you like the answer, Yoni?
No, not really. I thought it was a logical answer.
Yeah, it's a nice answer, Akir.
I think that there's room to ask whether this is true. It seems like it's a much more fundamental distinction than he's making it sound like. That in a Yadpal Tachtona is just a way of evaluating what the value of the remaining labor is. The way of evaluating what the value of the work the Paul Levin had already done is. So
yeah.
In a Davar Sheino Oven, you're just it's not a question of covering costs of other poalim. It's just this is the method by which we evaluate how much they've done and how much you owe them rightfully. And in Davar Avad, there's a real liability on their part to cover the costs of poalim you hire.
I think that's 100%. That's 100% correct. I think you're totally right. Meaning the kind of the simplicity of the way the Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz belies it masks the real conceptual difference between those two different grounds of liability. In Davar Aved, it's a liability that the poel has to cover your costs, and that's why the remedy is not limited to the going market rate, right? He has a duty to get the job done, and that's why he's on the hook to cover these new workers, even if they're much more expensive than the going market rate. But in Davar She'eino Avod case, you know, it's just like a way to calculate rightfully what he's entitled to under the contract. You know, Mechashvin Masha Asid Lasos. And just one second. You want to say hi to everybody for a second? Oh. Guys, could you just hold on for 1 second? Sorry, just hold on one second. Ayala, come say hi to everybody for a second. One second. So the point is, I agree with everything Yakir said. But Yakir, I think the this is an interesting case where like you get the sense that the Arena Peretz is kind of just interested in making sense of how Reb Dosa's Yadpal Tachtona is consistent with there being a difference between his view and Davar Avad according to Rashi, right? And so he's just saying, oh, here's an afkamina between them. But you're right that this points to like a much deeper conceptual difference. One's a way just to contract to figure out what the breaching poel is entitled to under the contract, and the other one is trying to figure out what liability he has to ensure that the balabais is not messed over by the Davar Avad. Is that right, Yakir?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. Do you have a further point, or? Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Good. Okay. Let me just make one other ha'ara on this discussion here. So the Pischei Choshen in Ha'ara Lamed Beis, I think just raises an interesting point. Suppose the Baal HaBayis doesn't hire a worker, and instead he does the work himself, right? Can he pay himself a salary and charge that to the poel who breached under the same theory that he could hire a different worker to cover to finish the job and charge it to the poel? So he's just paying himself instead of paying somebody else. So he thinks he can. He says, "V'nir dehu adinim lo sachar poel al baal habayis ba'atzmo gamar hamalacha yochol lenachos mischar hapoel schar tircho." Now he says, you can't jack up the prices to your personal rate. So for example, if I hired a lawyer to represent me, and then the lawyer usually makes $200 an hour, and then he breaches, and I have to represent myself, and I usually charge, let's say, $700 an hour, I can't, you know, impose this exorbitant fee on him, but I could charge him what the Stam Poel would be making for doing a comparable job. But the important point is that he does think that doing the job yourself would constitute a kind of socher alehen that can then be charged to the breaching poelim. I think that's a big of a chiddush, because to get back to the point that Eitan seemed to be raising earlier, if you're thinking about this in terms of nezek, you might say there's no real hefsid if you're doing the job yourself. So it's not really hefsid in the nezek way of thinking about things. But if you're thinking about it in terms of just a sui generis principle of Socher Aleihen, then, you know, yeah, you hired yourself to finish the job. Yoni.
It seems like there's even more, actually. Sounds like he's saying that if you do the work, usually, so then you could charge your regular rate. It's only if Ein Darko L'Asav Melacha that you can't charge more than usual.
Ah, that's a good point. So you're saying that, like, if I am a lawyer who generally does this kind of work, then, yeah, I could charge my going rate. It's only if there's, like, an opportunity cost. Like, hey, you know, I usually do investments or something, and now I'm losing out on that to do this, that I can't bill the worker for. Is that right, Yoni?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Can you rephrase that one more time?
Yeah, Yoni, you want to make your point again? And then I'll get Donnie.
Yeah, it's, take the lawyer case. I hired a lawyer. He bills me at $200 an hour. I don't have the time for it currently, but I usually bill myself at $700 an hour. He flakes last minute, so I end up covering for him through my own work. So now I can take deduct from his salary up to the value of $700 an hour. That's my regular rate.
Right. Donnie?
Well, why? I think it's kind of on the same lines as what Yoni was saying, but why can't you charge for, let's say it's something like I had something else planned that day to do.
Yeah.
That was going to get me like $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like why can't that be considered nezek in that sense?
So maybe it can. We'll talk about nezek, recovering nezek from the worker who breached and actually the next chabura. Notice right now, the Gemara doesn't prescribe Nezek as a remedy, interestingly enough. The Gemara really just prescribes Socher Aleihen U'Matan, which means, like, oh, hiring new workers to finish a job. It doesn't tell us what happens b'dieved if he suffered losses because of the breach. Donnie.
So it seemed to go against the idea that this could be about Nezek.
That's right. I think right now, the way the Gemara has it, it actually seems like this is a non-Nezek-based remedy. Socher Aleihen U'Matan, it's like the worker has a duty to get the job done. And these are two ways of getting the job done. Socher Aleihen U'Matan. And so these are ways of like seeing the contract through or ensuring that the contract gets done. These are not ways of saying what damages am I owed if the guy messed me over. I think that's the right way to think of it. Does that answer your point, Donnie? Yeah, good. I see. Eitan, you raising a hand?
Yeah, I just had a hypothetical. Let's say the owner has the ability to, but chooses not to. Like, he can if he wanted to be a carpenter and finish up the job or whatever job is required, but he chooses not to. In that case, could he still get or recoup some of the money in which the...
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. That's going to be a discussion in the Shach and the Ramah later on. So we'll talk about it in our discussion of Nezek. Because that's going to be, if you didn't do it, then what are your damages?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So let's take Yakir and then Yair.
Yeah. Two things. First of all, and maybe this was sort of covered by Dani already, is when he says, Skar Tircha, maybe the Torah itself is the Hefseid. And that's why it's specifically Skar Tircha.
No, interesting. Okay. Yeah, the way I read this just means like, you know, it's not like he's actually paying somebody. So the way to justify the paying is that, you know, this is like what my tircha is worth, right?
Okay.
As opposed to this idea of, oh, every bala bias has a schara maruba because it always takes more to induce a bala bias to do menial labor because, you know, they usually don't do this kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And second, I think that there is a question here about whether when you're Sofachar Aleihen, is this like what's sort of a primary duty, secondary duty question? Meaning, are you Sofachar Aleihen? Are you hiring a subcontractor of the poel on his behalf? to allow him to fulfill his primary duty of finishing the contract?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I'm going to get to that in the next mockbar here. And so I want you to bring that question up when we get to this next mock of the tour in Simon Shin Lama Gamble. But I think that's a really interesting question. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, in relationship to here, I think it's less of a chiddush for the Balbais to collect if he considers himself a subcontractor of the Po'el.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, he's satisfying the Po'el's obligation on his behalf, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, yeah, you're...
Yeah, I just want to push back a little bit on Yogi's read, which is that I think the formulation at the end of the Pesach Hoshen, the Nirash Yoter, Mr. Stan Poel, Eno Yachal Menachos, presumably pushes against Yogi's possibility that you're able to pay more than a Stan Poel.
Yeah. It could be that, though, it depends, right? So you can emphasize this phrase, which means, oh, you're capped at Stan Poel, or you could emphasize that the whole discussion here is kind of broken. Sorry, this whole is really broken into two. The first half of the discussion is, The first half of the discussion is talking about Lo Sachar Bavan Yachal Anachas Mischar Po Schar Tircho, meaning whatever my going rate is, I could deduct that. If I'm a lawyer and I charge like $700, I could charge that. Again, your liability is going to be capped at double the schar of what the poll is going to get. And then, imein darko lasos malacha, yesh lehistapik im yachal lenachos kischar balabayis. And even v'nira shiyosar mistam poll, you could argue, is only qualifying this last phrase, right, in the case where you're trying to charge balabayis rates. That's how Yair's reading it. I think Yoni's reading it, that this last phrase qualifies both of the above, that in any event, the last phrase... Yosef Mistan Pol will qualify the preceding two cases, right? Whether you generally do this malacha and charge a higher rate, or whether you don't generally do this malacha and are doing it anyway. Either way, Yosef Mistan Pol and Yachal Anachos. Yair, you have a follow-up point?
Yeah, the follow-up point is that I think it's implicit, both in the Sugya and in the Pesachei Choshen, that Imein Darko Lasos Malacha is actually a reason to be chayav more. Right, the schar balabayis is a greater level of schar, more than a stam worker, and so the idea that you get paid, everyone, you know, you obviously get paid regular workers' wages. The shaila is, do you get paid balabayis wages?
Right. Extra... Yeah, that's how you want to read it. You want to read it. I mean, the whole question here is, can you charge extra for your, like, special services or something? And you want to say no. Yeah, you're...
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay, good. Now I want to turn. So those are just like isolated haros with respect to the idea of socher alein ad kedei scharan. So in particular, these kind of three small issues we just addressed. The question of how we distinguish between ad kedei scharan in davar ha'avod and the idea of Reb Dosa, Yad Poel Al Tachtona, that was one issue. The second idea raised by the Pesachei Choshen, whether the Poelim would have to know that they're being hired for a Davar Avod. And this last case of whether, if the Balabayas does the work himself, can he still charge some of that to the Poelim? So what I want to address now is more of a broad issue. And that is, how do we view the relationship between the remedy of Socher Aleihen and the remedy of Matan? So if you saw the tour in Simen Shin Lamed Gimel, so the tour starts off by saying, Ketzad Matan, right? How do you deceive the workers to induce them to finish the job? And then he says, Im Eino Yachol Lehat Osan, Socher Pol Emacherim. If you're not able to induce them to stay, then you could hire. Then you hire new workers. And so the mashmos of the tour, and this is pointed out by the Pesachei Choshen, is that there's an obligation lechatchila to first try to deceive the workers into staying, and only if you exhaust that remedy, and only if it fails, can you then go ahead and hire new workers to impose the cost on the ones who breached. And so in the Gemara, you don't really see any evidence for this distinction between the Socher Alein remedy and the Matan remedy. They both seem to be open remedies. Here, the Tur introduces the idea that there's a preference for Socher Alein, and only afterwards can you go ahead towards Matan. It's a really interesting idea. And the question is, where do you think the Tur gets that from, and what's the basis for his making this position or making this argument? So any of you have thoughts on this?
Maybe there's some sort of like higher preference that we have for Poland that we've already contracted with.
Yeah.
Maybe like within the contractual agreement, like there's an implicit desire that you want to contract with that contractor.
So remember, the worker is trying to breach, right? He's trying to get out. And let's say I hired you to, you know, sing at the wedding, and now you got an offer to sing somewhere else for, you know, double it or something. And I say, oh, no, if you stay with me, I'll triple it. Right? So I'm allowed to induce you to stay by lying to you. And so the question is, why should there be a preference for that over, you know, the preference of, I'll just hire new workers and put some of the cost on you?
Well, I understand what the alternatives are, but I think it's like an interesting, it's like something negative that the Poel incurs, that in this specific incident is worse for him because he ends up not making more profit.
Yeah.
But in the broader, Poel Balabait relationship is something that, keeps him with a job, as opposed to allowing the Balabait to find other Poelim to do the job instead of him.
Yeah, that's a nice point. So one way of putting it, and I think this is exactly what Noah's getting at, is look, this is the least costly imposition generally on the Poel, right? So look, just to get the guy to stick around and finish the job, that doesn't impose too much of a cost on the Poel in most cases. But to start hiring workers, that's going to put the Poel on the hook for a higher liability. It's more onerous. And so the halacha prefers that you adopt a course of least cost for the Poel when you're trying to triage a Dover HaAvad case. Is that that's what you're getting at, Noah?
Something like that.
Yeah. If you have a different idea, you could reform.
I'm gonna sit on it.
Okay. So I see Eitan has a hand. But let me, Eitan, before I take your hand, actually, let me just say that I think that that formulation of Noah's point only works in a standard case where the Poel is not getting a better contract. He's not breaching for a better offer. In the case where the Poel is breaching for a better offer, so let's say the case that I gave, where Noah was going to sing at, you know, this wedding, and then somebody offers him double what I was going to offer him, and then the halacha says, oh, you could lie to him and claim that you'll pay him quadruple, and then only pay him what you were initially going to pay him, that would end up messing over the worker even more, arguably, right? So, admittedly, it just might depend on the case. Eitan.
Yeah, I was going to say, could it just be, this is like a larger comment on our desire to maintain contracts between worker and owner? And so it's not like a tircha thing, and it's not about making sure we care for the worker and how much money he gets, but they made a contract. We don't want to make normal this idea of breaching contracts when we value contracts and relationships between people.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that's definitely in the right direction. Eitan, what I think is kind of, what I want to say is kind of a variation on what you want to say. So let me just say what I think is going on here, and then I'll take Yakir and Yoni's points. So what I think is going on here is that it seems, at least on the face of it, that, look, if we distinguish between the primary and secondary duties of a contract, the primary duties being what's the contract entered into for. So the primary duty is always to get the job done, right? To perform, to complete the agreement of the contract. A secondary duty will arise, well, when there's some problem, when there's some breach of the primary duty. That's how the secondary duty arises. And what I think is going on here is that the tour is telling us that when we want to enforce contracts, when we think about remedies, we always want to stick as closely as possible to the primary remedy that's available to us. So deceiving the worker into finishing the job is a way of upholding the primary duties of the contract, right? We're just convincing him to actually perform and finish the job. The remedy of socher aleihen is really a secondary remedy. It's farther removed from the primary obligation of finishing the contract, of performing. And so the preference in a case of breach of Dabar Aved is always to try to preserve intact the primary obligations as much as possible. And socher aleihen is farther removed than matan. Matan, deceiving them into finishing, performing the contract, is like a fulfillment of the primary obligations of the agreement. Socher aleihen, hiring new workers and imposing some of that cost, would be a kind of a secondary remedy that only arises in cases of breach of the primary duty. And so I think that's why the tour thinks that there's a preference for the primary over the secondary. I know Yakir was raising the point a little earlier, you know, to what extent is socher aleihen a secondary remedy? So we'll talk more about that in a second. Let me take the two comments that we have here. So let's take Yoni and then Yakir.
So I think it's an interesting point. I like it. I think that another source besides the tour that has like the same primary or secondary duty distinction in terms of whether it's directly working or secondary duty being identified in the alternative would be in the Shah. This is like later in the course, when he talks about Shita Rashi, and he suggests that even Shita Rashi would agree that you can't be hozer. That the kinyan means that you can't be hozer. That's only if it's like there's no, that's only if there's like no basin, right? So he differentiates whether or not if there's like a basin present. So then the primary duty is he can't be hozer. If he is hozer anyway, then there's no body that can force him not being hozer. So only then can you then be socher aleihen.
That's very good. We're going to talk about that actually, because I think we're going to see a parallel issue when we discuss kfiya, right? When we discuss coercing somebody to finish the job, and we speak about damages, getting back to Eitan's original point, and we speak about damages that you incur for not doing the job at all. Let's say I don't show up, and that causes you to suffer damages. Am I liable to any extent? Just hold on 1 second. Yoni, I'm still with you, right? Yoni, you here?
Yeah.
So I think we'll talk about, I think you're right, that's a parallel structure, right? When we speak about when there's a breach and then there are damages, damages for sure are going to be a secondary remedy, right?
I'm saying even more than that, though. I'm saying it's not just that there's like damages being a secondary remedy. It's specifically the obligation to be like, to be not there or having these employees work for you. Right, that specifically is true. It's a primary duty. It's only if they are not compliant, these are taken from their chavila or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's almost equivalent to the tour. Just like the only difference is when you can apply the secondary remedy.
Right. I think you're right to talk about this parallel structure, but you have to exhaust the primary remedies before you could get to the secondary ones. Guys, one second here. Can you always say hi to everybody? Or
Wes, it could be either way.
He left us off, and I apologize again about the multiple disruptions. So, in short, I think Yoni's right that about the parallel structure, about exhausting the primary remedies, and that damages will be a good example of that. Or specific performance and damages. I do think you'll see that there are differences between. So I think there's an important difference between our sugya and that sugya. which I'll get to in a second. Yoni, does that, do you want to follow up for a second before I respond?
I mean, I have to know what the differences you're going to say are. So, I mean, yeah. As long as you agree with me, I'm perfectly happy.
Right. So I think that the only difference is that, as Yakir was pointing us to earlier, the remedy of Socher Alehen is very close to the remedy of, to a primary remedy. So you might think that, think of all these remedies as lying on a spectrum. Obviously, performance is upholding the primary obligations of the contract. Socher Alehen is a little farther removed from that, right? You're hiring new workers to finish the job instead of the original guy, so it's a new party, but at least you're still getting the job done. So that's kind of a primary remedy, but that's a more secondary. And then the idea of damages is even further removed, right? Because you're not getting the contract fulfilled, you're just being paid out cash value in lieu of the contract being able to be fulfilled. And kfiya, physical coercion, is an interesting question where exactly that lies. We'll see exactly how that fits in. It might be a primary remedy, it might be a secondary remedy. We'll see that when we get to that sugya. So, Yoni, do you want to follow up? Or you're good for now?
No, I think I agree. Well, I guess we'll see when we get there, but I think I agree with you for the most part.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So is everybody on board for this reading of the Torah, at least in Siman Shin Lamed Gimel, that the reason why he argues that there's a preference for deceiving the workers into finishing the job, even though it appears to be dishonest, is because at least that's consistent with upholding the primary duties of the contract. Whereas Socher Alehen is moving to like a secondary kind of a duty that only arises in the case of breach. Yakir.
I agree. I have a very Balabatish alternative, which is just that you don't want to involve a third party in the dispute.
Yeah, like it's just like a cleaner way of doing it.
Yeah, like it's not fair to these other poli that they're not gonna have to get involved in the whole dispute and yeah.
That's like another, that is another way. It's just like more efficient. It's a more efficient remedy. It doesn't bring third parties in. I see everyone's babysitting today. Everybody say hi to Ami. Yeah, okay, you got to raise Ami up so you can all say hi to Ami. Hey, Ami.
Say hi to everyone.
Hi.
Hey, Ami.
Hi.
It's great. So I think, yeah, that's like a Balabatish way. I just close Ami's ears when I say that was a Balabatish. But yeah, I think it's another way of making sense of this. But I think that would even be consistent with upholding the primary duties, right? The fact a contract is a relationship between two parties, and the fact that you could continue to uphold the contract just between those two parties itself shows that this is like one of the upholding the primary obligations of the contract. You're not resorting to secondary remedies. So I think that's consistent with the more conceptual interpretation. Okay, the Piskei Foshan here makes that diak in the Torah about that the Torah thinks l'chatchila you have to be mate. He does say, and this is interesting, he says, "Mikol makom mistaver she'af l'das ha'tur b'di'eved k'shelo nisa l'hatosam ela miyad sachar aleihem masha asa aso." He thinks that if anything, this hierarchy in the Torah between the primary remedy and the secondary remedy is just l'chatchila. He thinks b'di'eved it can't be that you would lose your right to charge the breaching workers for the cost of hiring new workers just because you didn't try to exhaust the primary remedies of Hatah first. So I'm not sure what I think about this. You know, from the language of the Torah, he's probably right. There's not enough textual evidence to think that it's Ma'akev. But I think the more you go in for this conceptual interpretation that you must first try to exhaust the primary obligations of the contract before you could resort to secondary ones, I think you might then try to suggest that could be ma'akev b'di'evit as well. So I think it's an interesting point raised by the Piskei Choshen. Do any of you have strong feelings on that one way or the other? No? Could go either way?
Like, he's agnostic.
I think
he doesn't really deal with the question.
Who?
The Piskei Choshen.
Well, the Piskei Choshen, right, he doesn't really get into the... He just thinks that it's just din l'chatchila, the hierarchy is in the Chachila, not in Bediyavid, right? He doesn't get into, like, the Lamdisha explanation for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He believes that the Torah for sure has a hierarchy, but he doesn't know how to... He's not explaining what...
That's right, not at all. That's right. I mean, he could say, as Yakir put it, maybe he has more of a Balabatish interpretation of it even, right? I mean, you could also read the Torah as non-normative. You could say the Torah is just assuming, hey, you know, who's going to start Socher Aleya, and if you could just be Mata, it's just simpler. And so Mistama, people are going to exhaust the... People are going to try to be Mata first before they start looking for new workers. Yoni.
Yeah, just like assessing the comment on its own right, just like the comment itself, I think the more you think that even the Bediyavid, if you didn't try to be Masa, then you just went straight to Socher. So I think the more you think that that Socher is like similar-ish to a primary duty, and then it might be slightly more secondary, but it's still within the realm of the primary duty, then more that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the more you relegate Socher Aleihem to being like a real secondary duty, then I think it's much more difficult to suggest that you can just go straight Bediyavid.
That's a very nice way of putting it. So it's kind of getting back to Yakir's formulation earlier. You're saying that the more we think of Socher Aleihen as a primary remedy, well, then the more it might just be a din lechatchila. But the more you think that Socher Aleihen is totally secondary, then it would make sense that even Bediyevid, you have a duty to be mateh first and preserve the primary remedies before you get to the secondary ones. I like that that way of interpreting this. Okay, so let's move on now to the second half of the discussion of the Gemara within Socher Aleihen U'Matan. So far we discussed Matan, we discussed the classic case of Socher Aleihen Ad Kedei Scharan. But remember the Gemara Nayin Ches told us, based off this question that Rava posed to Rav Nachman, that in some cases you could be Socher Aleihen more than Kedei Scharan. So what are those cases? So first the Brisa just says that, you know, sometimes you could hire workers up to 10 times, you could hire new workers up to 10 times of the contract of the breaching workers and still charge the breaching workers for that amount. Rashi here, I don't have it on the source sheet, but Rashi here on this line of Ad Arba Mechamishim Zuz says that this is a case where the original contract was only worth like Arba or Chamisha Zuz. And now you could charge Arbaim Chamishim, which is 10 times the value of the original contract. So how do you reconcile the Braisa, which says that you can only charge them Ad Kedei Scharan, with the Braisa that says Ad Arbaim Chamishim Zuz? So the Gemara answers, Amar Le, Kitanya Hahi Shebasa Chavil Liyado. This extraordinary ability to charge up to 10 times the value of the original contract is only a Basa Chavil Liyado, if like the worker deposited his tools in your rishus, and then somehow that gives you a right to make him liable for more. So the first thing I want to point out here is that although the Gemara says Ad Arbaim Chamishim Zuz, which at least on Rashi's interpretation is 10 times the value of the original contract, a lot of postgame seem to think that this amount is lav dafka. It really just means that the Gemara is saying if he deposited his tools, then you could hold him liable even up to an extraordinary amount. The specific amount listed in the Gemara is not really important. You can see the Piskei Choshen, for example, in Perek Yud Aleph, Sif Yud Dalet here. The way he quotes this, he says, "Hayim mamon apol biad balabayis, afidu mamon acher she'enu kli menusa." We'll talk about this. Yachol liskar po'al acher lenachos mi mamon ze ad kidei shir shederech lehosif lepo'alim kidei lahatzel davar ha'avod. You could really charge the workers up until the amount that's normal to hire workers to help you avert an irreparable loss. So Ad Arbaim Chamishim Zuz is lav dafka. It really just means some customary amount that's normal to hire workers for when you're in a bind. You could see this, for example, in the Sma in Shin Lamed Gimel Sif Kadan Chav Vav. The Sma says Ad Arbaim Chamishim Zuz Kishir Shederech Bali Batim Liskor Leis Hatzarech Lemalachdan Shelo Tavod. This amount that the Gemara gives is really just the customary amount that people hire for to avert these losses. And it follows, he says, Shir mem vinun lav dafkahu, elek fidarkan shabalabatim, uchafiha inyan shaldavar aved lahosif alagroa mishir mem vinun. So, and the Shach adopts this idea also. So they all move to say it's lav dafka. This has its roots in the Ramban. The Ramban in Ayin Vav Mebeis and Vav Mitzia says, the reason why the Gemara says Ad Arbaim Chamishim Zuz is Derech Balei Batim Liskar Kein B'Davar HaAved. That's just what Balei Batim do, is they'll pay up to that amount really to save themselves from a loss. Now, the question that I want to pose to you is, why should Basa Chavila Liyado make this kind of important difference? Why should your general ability to charge the Poalim, why should their liability generally be capped at the value or double the value of their contract? But if somehow Basa Chavila Liyado, they deposited their tools in your Rishus, suddenly that puts them on the hook for even much more. So why does that change things? Anybody have a suggestion? So I'll tell you, I think there are Yoni.
Well, I think like there's like different people say different things, but yeah. Like the basic two approaches are either there's some type of kinyan involved when they're the chavila is the yado,
yeah.
Or that there's some type of sneakle dot now, which is covering a larger amount based on the fact that you gave him possession, your stuff.
Yeah, that's good. I think we're actually going to see three approaches, but I think the two you mentioned are definitely a subset of those three. So one approach is to say, and I think this is the most interesting approach, is to say that once the chavila is baliyado, once the worker deposited his tools in your rishus, then there's a full kinyan on haschalas malacha. And when there's then there's a full kinyan on the malacha. And once there's a full kinyan, then the worker could be on the hook for any cost to get the job done. That would be a massive chiddush, because that means that the din of Davar HaAveh that we've been discussing until now is really Kodem Kinyan. Without a Kinyan, the Poel is on the hook to be Matan or Sochalein Ad Kedei Scharan. But once there's a Kinyan and there's like a real claim right that you have against the Poel, then he could be on the hook B'mamon up to any amount in principle, any customary amount, for you to hire new workers to get the job done. What evidence is there for this read of Kinyan? So if you look at the Mordechai in Simon Shin Mem Ches in our Sugya, so he quotes Rashi, who reads our Sugya, that what Basa Chavil Liyado means is that it's like the workers deposited their tools in your Rishus. So you know, you have construction workers, they drop off their drills and their tools, etc. The Mordechai doesn't like that. He says, "De'im kein heich yochal lachzer bo ha'have meshicha gemura, k'damar perak hazav, de meshichas tispores mahanya." You remember we saw earlier in Bava Metzia, I think it was like around Daf Mem Ches, that once the worker does a kinyan on the clay omenos, or when the balabayas does a kinyan on the clay omenos, the Gemara gave the case of the worker, the barber, once you pick up his scissors, then you're kone the malacha. And you can't be chozer. So the Mordechai seems to be saying, hey, Rashi's interpretation of our sugya can't be right. We don't have to worry about that. Because once Basa Chavil Liyada, then this Meshicha Gemura, there's a real kinyan on the Malacha. And we don't have to worry about what the Mordechai's concern right now. But the important point for us is that the Mordechai thinks that Basa Chavil Liyada can be a proxy for there being a kinyan on the Malacha. Combine that with the Ritva's observation. The Ritva here says that the shear of Ad Kedei Scharan and even Basa Chavil Liyado, these are just umdinas, as we saw earlier, of Mistama Hainu Da'asiku Adatayu. When you hire workers, oh, Mistama, this is how much they think they're going to be liable for. So they're Mischayev themselves up to this amount. But then he quotes Das Mori Harav, who says, She'ein kol dinei mishnah seinu v'gemara da'ala el b'misha sachar po'alim ba'amira below kinyan. All the dinim in our Gemara are all cases without kinyan, pre-kinyan. She'im nischayvu po'alim b'kinyin, harei ha'melacha mutelas aleihen, ba'afilu nensu chayavan la'ashlim al yadon ol yidei achirim, ol l'shalei ma'ashe hefzid balabayis. He says, all these dinim of Davar Ha'aved and Chazara are all pre-kinyin. If there is a real kinyin, then they would have a liability to finish the job at any cost. So what I just want to suggest here is a combination of this idea of the Mordechai with this idea of the Ritva. The Mordechai is telling us that Basa Chavil Liyado is a kind of a kinyan. And the Ritva tells us, B'shem Mori Harav, that if there is a kinyan, then Sochar Aleinu Matan is not the remedy, because you have a much stronger remedy. Afilu Nensu Chayavan L'Hashlim Al Yadon O'Yidei Acherim O'Lashalim Asha Hifzit Balabayas. I think one way of making sense of Basa Chavir Liyado, combining the Mordechai and the Ritva, is to say that now there's a kinyan on the Malacha, and once there's a kinyan on the Malacha, the liability is for whatever it costs the Balabayas to finish the job. The only time you're limited to the remedy of Socher Alein Umatan, Ad Kedei Scharan, is when there's no kinyan. Does everybody see that Chiddush? So it's a very mechudash read of the Sugya, but it emerges out of combining this reading of the Mordechai with the Ritva. Yoni.
What's interesting about that read is that you would still hold that, like, the dikduk that Mordechai makes in Rashi would still apply. And then the Mordechai is medakte that if that you have other money in your hands, right, so then that wouldn't work, right? That other money
doesn't. I agree, 100%, 100%. It would have to be the clay ominous, because only the clay ominous would be a kinyan on the Malacha.
Right.
Yes, 100%. I think that's definitely right. Okay, now, that's one way of reading the sugya. Yair?
Can you speak a little bit to why the Mordechai rejects this reading? Because it seems like you put the Mordechai and the Ritva together, but both of them seem to reject that possibility. That's what Chavir Liyado means.
Yeah, it's a good point. I want to really not address that right now, because I'm still puzzled as to why the Mordechai says the imkein hech yuchal lachzer bo ha'avi mashicha gemura, right? It sounds like he would think there would be even much if it were a real kinyan, there should be much stronger remedies, right? And to me it sounds like, well, hey, the remedy of ad chamishim of arba'im mezuz sounds like a very strong remedy, right? So I think we'll when we see this. When we see some further things in the sugya, we'll come back to try to make sense of what the Mordechai is getting at. That's a very good point, Yair. So that's one way of reading the sugya. I mean, the second way of reading the sugya is the Ritva's preferred reading, is that this is just a kind of hischaivus midas. That if you happen to deposit your kalim, you could see here, if you happen to deposit your kalim in the rishus of the balabayis, oh, mistama hiknu lo chavila shalahen lischaiv ad kadeh demeha. Very difficult umdana. It's like, oh, mistama, if I put my tools in your possession, then mistama I had his chayvus to use those as a kind of a collateral to cover any liability. But notice, though, on this read of the Ritva, so it's a kind of chiyav mitamariv, and a kind of implicit his chayvus midas, but I do think the Ritva would have to concede that the liability would be capped at the value of the kalim that I deposited in your rishus. Because he's just saying, oh, there's an umdana that I'm mischayev the kalim to satisfy any liability that would arise from my breach. So that's the second way of reading the significance of Basa Chavir Liyado. There's a third way of reading Basa Chavir Liyado that I have to add to the Mar Makomo sheet. The Pische Choshen raises this point. I think it's kind of, and he himself is upset by it. And he says that he thinks some Achronim think it's really just muchzakus kind of a theory, that the more muchzak, so it's a kind of a suffix whether you could hire new workers and impose this extra cost on the balabayas. If you have some of the bal, if you impose the cost on the poalim, if you happen to have some moment of the poalim in your rishus, then that adjudicates, or that shifts some of the questions of suffix into your discretion, into your side of the court. I think that's a very difficult way of reading the sugya. I mean, that theory is basically saying that, you know, the halacha begrudgingly allows you to hire new workers at the expense of the breaching ones. The more you don't have to trample on anyone's cheskas mamon to do so, the more open the halacha will be in allowing you to do this. So if you happen to have any mamon of the poel in your rishus, then you could use that mamon to satisfy your cost of hiring new workers. But it's purely like a cheshbon in cheskas mamon. And the underlying theory would be that the halacha doesn't want you to encroach on a cheskas mamon to hire new workers. But if you happen to have his mamon in your rishus, you're not really encroaching on his cheskas mamon. So we actually have three different ways of understanding the significance of Bas Chavir Liyado. So again, the first way is combining the Mori Harav and the Ritva with the Mordechai to say that now there's a kinyan on the Malacha, in which case you could hold the worker on the hook for an extraordinary amount to finish the job. The second way of looking at it is the Ritva's view that it's a hischaivas midas, mistama, he's mischaiv himself up to the value of the chavila that he actually deposited in Yerushas. And the third view, and I'll add this to the Makor Rashi, this idea of the Pisrei Choshen, that will allow you to hire workers and impose the cost on the breachers, but not at the expense of a cheskas mamon. So anytime you happen to have any money of the worker, the breaching worker in your rishus, that'll allow you to do this, to hire new workers without competing on a cheskas mamon. Yair, do you still have your hand up from before, or that's a mistake?
No, I just like playing with the buttons.
Okay. So who's our other hand?
Can you explain what that means? What do you mean by not competing on the cheskas mamon?
Yeah. So just thinking like, the breaching workers. Meaning the idea is that the halacha doesn't want to be motzi mamon from anybody, but if the worker happened to have deposited his kalim in your rishus, then it's not really impeding on a cheskas mamon, because like you have that stuff in your rishus anyway, right? So it's kind of this weird formality of the halachic system that we don't want to be motzi mamon, but for formal reasons sometimes something won't be considered being motzi mamon because the mamon just happens to be in your rishus. You know, he happened to have lent you a book a month earlier, so now you could use that book to satisfy your new costs. That would be the theory.
Okay.
I'll add that Pisrei Choshen to the source sheet. I think it's a difficult theory, but you know, it has I don't want to say evidence, but it has some consistency with the way the Makoros speak about it. Yoni.
I guess it'd be like a take off the Pisrei Choshen. It's not really exactly what you're saying. But could you suggest that in some ways the fact that the Chavila is now in the Baal Bayis hands, it kind of changes who is at loss if there's a breach? And then if ordinarily, if there's a Sevar Avos, the Baal Bayis is the one who loses in the breach. But now that the Chavila is in Biado, now there's kind of a change in the
It's difficult for me to see how you could divorce that from questions of muchzakos. If you have a good way of divorcing the way you're putting it, and showing that it's not grounded in some underlying conception of who's muchzak on the mamon, I think that'd be a really interesting line of reasoning to pursue. I just don't see how you'd be able to do that.
Okay, I mean, maybe it isn't related to muchzakos. I think the point would be not so much about if it's relating to sfeikot, which I think that part's a little weirder than the sfeikot, but it's about the muchzakos relating to who's that consequence, you know, who's liable in the case of a breach.
Yeah.
And that's what the change in muchzakos is doing.
Yeah. Let me think about it a little more, but I hear the suggestion. We got a hand from Ben.
Yeah.
Ben, are you there in the Heights? Are you in the Heights? Or you're in?
What?
Are you in the Heights?
I'm in the Heights.
All right, how's that going for you?
It's good. It's good. I don't like being inside all day. Got to get out a bit. Now all the stress and everything is closed. So.
I'm upset I can't use my outside office today because it's a little rainy here in Philly. But next Chabur, okay. I'll be outside hopefully.
You gotta come if I go to Charleston next week till the end of this. You gotta come with.
I'll be there.
the Pisrei Choshen is not saying that. He's saying that leaving something in his rishus is a statement that you could be mostly anything of any form of appearance, or just specifically that object.
Yeah.
That you could take.
I think he's meaning that you could use anything from the object that was left in your rishus, from the object that was specifically left in the rishus to satisfy the liability. That's right. It's not like the Kinyan theory that
But no more than that.
Correct. No more than that. I think for his view, because it's all about the muchzakas on the mamon, it would be capped by the mamon that was left there. Yeah.
Sure.
Good. Let me actually just follow up on Ben's point. You might think that these three different ways of understanding the significance of Bas Chavil Yado would really tie into a Machlokas Rishonim about whether this halacha Bas Chavil Yado you could be socher ad arbaim rechamishim zuz is only when he deposits the actual clay umanos in your possession, or if it holds true for any kalim or any mammon of his, of the workers that happen to be in your rishus, right? So I think, for example, if you think that the significance of basa chavil liyado, and this is what Yoni and Ben are pointing out, if you think that the significance of basa chavil liyado is that it triggers a kind of a kinyan on the malacha, then of course it would have to be limited to the clay omenos, right? Because only the depositing of the clay omenos would be a sealing of the contract. So you can see here, Rashi in Bo Metzia Ayin Ches says, Basa chavil yadam yesh biyadam mishal en arbe kederecha umnim hamekablen alein malacha mevin clay omenos lebeis balabayas. So the beginning of Rashi actually leans in a different direction from the end of Rashi, but at least the end of Rashi says, oh, it's the derech ha'umnim to bring their klei umnus to the balabayas. And we already saw the diak in the Mordechai, who said that some people are medayik from Rashi, that the only time this really helps is if it's from zeh ha'esek, right? To ha'hacha davka klei ha'umnuso shel osa malacha. Right, the Mordechai says some people are medayik from Rashi, that it's only if you acquire the clay omenus of this malacha, that's the only time it's going to trigger any kind of a real kinyan. Right, but obviously, if he just so happens to put something else in your rishus, you happen to have his cooking book or his sefer, that's not going to be a kinyan on this thing at all. That I think that makes a lot of sense. So if you're thinking in terms of kinyan, I think this diuk in Rashi would be correct. And you could see, for example, the Mordechai has a very famous tshuva from the Maharami Rutenberg in Simen Shin Mem Tes. Pause for 1 second. He quotes the Maharami Rutenberg. He's talking about a case where you have a malamed who's teaching somebody's son. Guys, I'm going to wrap this up in 3 minutes. Let's give me 3 more minutes to finish this. Nishal Arbino Meir al Ruvain Shehiskir Melamed Livno, Ulachar Shalamdo Vav Yamim Chazarbo Hamelamed. So you hired a teacher for your kid, and the teacher breached after 6 days. Now, as it happens, unrelated to the tutoring, Ubischa Ubishakvar Haya Sifro Shel Hamelamed Memushkan Biyad Ruvain. As it happens, this father just coincidentally was holding on to a book of the Melamed, and he wanted to sell off the book to cover his costs of hiring a new Melamed B'damim Yakarim. And so the Maharam said he can't do this, because the only time that there's significance to Bas Chavil Liyado is Hanimili B'Klei Umanuso, if it's the actual clay umanos of the malacha that he was using. So apparently in this case, the malamed wasn't using that sefer to teach the kids. Because then, the samcha daito tfeish lo yasa malacha b'makom acher. I guess, kivan shenosno clay umanuso biyada. I guess that shows that there was a stronger relationship, that you know he was really intending to work here, and there's like almost like a gemiras das on the kinyan. So I think that this Mordechai works out nicely with the idea that what's underlying our sugya is some sort of kinyan. And therefore, the basa chavil liyado is limited to the clay of osa omenos. The Mordechai quotes another deah who disagrees. And you can see the Shulchan Aruch actually quotes two deahs about this in Shin Lamed Gimel Vav. The Shulchan Aruch actually here says, V'im haya lahem mamon tachas yado, socher lahashlim hamalacha ad arbaim o chamishim zuz b'chol yom l'chol poel. Notice, the Shulchan Aruch here doesn't require that it be the demay, the clay omenos of osa malacha. He says it's significant that it's sufficient that you had mamon tachas yado. So if I hired Yair to work for me in a Devar Aved, and Yair happened to breach, and just coincidentally I happened to be holding on to Yair's copy of Halachic Man, right? Or I happened to be holding on to Yair's copy of, I don't know, something valuable. So I could sell that to cover my liability, even if it's unrelated to the work that he was going to do for me. So I think that suggests that it's really just about the muchzakos of mamon. So long as I toe face on something of his, that's going to be sufficient for me to satisfy my liability, because it mitigates the encroaching on a cheskas mamon consideration. Okay. So I think for sure, if you go in for the Kenyan theory, it would have to be also Cleomenos. If you go in for the Cheskas Mamon, it does not have to be. I would think that if you're going in for the Ritva's own Chiyav Mitam Arev, it would have to be some sort of Chiyav Mitam. It would have to be also Cleomenos, I think, because he's saying once he gives you the Chavila, Mistoma Hiknulo Chavila Shalhem Leschai Vakadei Demea. I'd imagine that Umdana only really holds for cases of also Cleomenos Atzman. I don't see why Yair's happened. The fact that Yair happened to have given me a book to hold on to months prior to my contracting him, why that would create an umdun that mistama hiknu lo achavil the sky of lo ad kedei demea. I imagine that would only hold true for deposits related to the malacha itself. Okay, so I think this machlokas ties in very nicely with what the underlying theory for bas achavil yado. What the underlying theory for that din, for what that din is. I see we have a hand from Yoni. Go for it, Yoni.
Yeah, just quickly before we end.
Yeah.
Could you argue that with Kenyan, maybe the opposite be true? That if there's a Kenyan, so now you're, so to speak, liable for any possible restitution, and therefore, if this is a way of getting restitution, it's the yado, so that you can take your kavila, you can take any other mamon also.
Yeah, I think that would be true if there's a Kenyan. But I think what the Kenyan reading of our sugya just uses basa chavil liyado as a proxy for determining whether there is a Kenyan. Eino chanami, if there's a separate maisa Kenyan separate from the basa chavil liyado, the same remedies would hold true. Does that answer your question, Yoni?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Okay, yashikoch, everybody. So for next Chabura, we'll talk about compelling performance and damages. That's really the Makoro starting on page 60. That's page 60 through about 63. You don't have to read through those long tshuvos. Just read through the underlying sections that talk about kfiya. And then we'll talk about whether b'dieved, if you suffer damages by the poel backing out in the davar avod, can you hold the poel liable for damages for real nezikin? That's going to be a really fascinating discussion that in part will turn on the relationship between tort remedies and contract remedies. All right, yashir koach, everybody. I apologize again about the distractions, the step out twice. It's the cost of doing business these days.